Okay, gentlemen, it's time to learn some Torah. So we have been talking about the halachos of grufo ketumah, and the halacha that it's necessary to cover the fire in order to allow food which is not yet a third cooked to remain on the fire from the Shabbos, or the halacha that grufo ketumah, that covering the fire is necessary. If I will machzir, if I will put the food back on the fire on Shabbos. That was our conversation basically all semester. And yesterday we began a practical conversation called the blech, right? The blech is the way we fulfill grufo ketumah in the world of the year 2020. The question is whether a blech works. We noted that according to the Chazon Ish, our standard blech does not work because it does not cool the fire down. And Rashi holds that grufo ketumah is based on cooling it down. However, standard Jewish practice is that we use a blech and all is grand. So here's the thing. Here's the thing. We noted that the Gemara on Lamed Zayin Amud Aleph, going over to Lamed Zayin on the base, discusses a case of Katma v'Huv'ara. It discusses a case where you do Katima, you put some ashes on the coals, and then it reignites. And ultimately, the Gemara sounds like that works. Katma v'huv'ara counts as ketumah. Well, here's the problem, gentlemen. If I hold like there are three reasons why ketumah helps. Rambam, Rashi, Ramach. Rambam says that ketumah helps because you're mesiach das. What you are doing is you are giving up on the food getting any hotter. Rashi says that katma helps because it cools the food down. But the third explanation is the Ramach that we called, that the Ramach said that katma helps because it's a heker, because it's a reminder. Well, how does katma v'huv'ara help? If I hold like the Rambam, that katma works because I gave up on the food. So the fact that it reignited later on doesn't really change anything. Because I already gave up on this food becoming hotter. So I'm done. I'm out of the parsha. It's like I walked out of the room, I slammed the door behind me, forget about the food. So according to the Rambam, I understand why Katma v'Huv'ara works. But if I hold like the Rabbeinu, like Moshe HaKohen, like the Ramach, so why would Katma v'Huv'ara work? That was a question that we addressed yesterday. We pointed out that the Merkevas HaMishnah asked this question. According to Rashi, also, you could ask, how does Katma v'Huv'ara work when Rashi says that the idea is that the coals are not hot anymore, or they're not so hot anymore? Well, here's the thing. Once it's Katma v'Huv'ara, so the fire is back. So yeah, the coals weren't so hot. But right now, the coals are definitely hot. So right now, I have to be worried that it is Hevel, etc. So the question is, how does Katma v'Huv'ara work according to Rashi? So, gentlemen, I have a theory, and that theory involves reading Rashi. Okay, here's my great theory, which is that we can explain Rashi based on reading Rashi. So, first of all, Rashi in the Mishnah says that katam anshayitin efer, Rashi says to cover it up and to cool them down. We saw that Rashi lamed vavam and beis in the Mishnah. Lechasosam uletzaninam. And we pointed out that there's another text in the Rashi, lechabosan, right, to extinguish them. By the way, according to the second text of Lechabosan, so it's really hard to understand how it works, because if your intention is to extinguish the coals, once the coals reignite, that shows you did a really bad job of extinguishing them, no? So how could Katma V'Kuv'ara possibly work? So here's the thing. Look at Rashi. Lamed Zayin Amid Beis. The Rashi begins, Shani Hocha De Katma. It's the sixth skinny line in the Rashi. Shani Hocha De Katma, says Rashi, V'Goli Daite D'lo Nichole B'Tzimuke. It's six words in the Rashi, but it seems to me that there are two chidushim in the Rashi. Rashi is making 2 points in these six words. Does anyone want to tell me what I mean, or do I have to tell you? It looks like no one is coming forth, so I'll say something first. Goli daite is the first point in Rashi. Goli daite means I am showing, or I am demonstrating, that I no longer want it to be an open, exposed fire. Goli daite. That idea of goli das sounds very much like the Rambam's hesech hada'as, doesn't it? The Rambam's idea that I'm giving up on the food, so goli daite sounds like the same thing. It's just like different words in Hebrew that mean the same thing. So problem one, Rashi here sounds like the Rambam. Problem two, Rashi writes, lo nichole b'tzimuke. You are not happy if the food is mitzameh, if the food shrivels up. You get the impression from this Rashi, from the last three words of Rashi, that Rashi is saying that katma v'huv arel only helps on food that is already fully cooked, and the only issue at hand is mitzameh v'yafelo. The only issue at hand is whether the food will shrivel up more, and that will enhance the food. But if the food is only a third cooked, and Rashi told us that, as a matter of practical halacha, I don't know theoretical halacha, but practical halacha, Rashi says, anan samchin on ad chananya, we rely on chananya. Well, Rashi would say, relying on Chananya, this opinion that once the food is a third cooked, that will only help, right? Relying on Chananya is true only when the coals are covered now. But we cannot rely on Chananya by a case of Katma V'Kuvayra. Right? Once the coals ignite, so Chananya would not permit, we could not permit Shekia when it's a third of the way cooked. I can only permit Shekia on Katma V'Kuv Ara once the food is all the way cooked. Nichalei B'tzimuke. Well, I would argue, one second, Yoni, let me just finish the thought and then I'll hear from you. What I would argue is that Rashi fundamentally holds that there are two reasons why Katma helps. There is one reason that Katma cools off the coals. That's Rashi in the Mishnah. The Katma which cools off the coals will even help for food that's a third cooked, right? However, there is a different type of Katma where the coals are no longer cool. That's called Katma V'Kuv Ara. And in that situation, it helps when the food is fully cooked, but it's still mitzdamek v'yafalo. In the situation of Katma V'Kuv Ara, Rashi is using the Rambam's reason. Rashi agrees with the Rambam's reason, but Rashi is saying you cannot hold of the Rambam's reason when the food is a third cooked. What do you mean? You are Mesiach Das. You don't care about the food anymore. You don't care about the food. It's not fully cooked. How do you not care about the food? Says Rashi, you're right. When the food is a third cooked, you can only permit Chatma based on the idea of cooling it down. But once the food is fully cooked, so then I could say I am Mesiach Das, and I could say I am giving up on the idea that this food is getting hot. So my read of Rashi is that Rashi agrees with the Rambam's reason. Ordinarily, the Rambam's reason would not help because I can't be Mesiach Das. I can't be giving up on food which is not yet fully cooked. But once the food is fully cooked, so then I can give up on the food. Mr. Zolti, now you have time for your rebuttal. So Rashi at the end of the sugya says that all of these Amoraim are going against Hananya. That's true. Okay, but I have to explain within those Amoraim. In other words, 1 second. Let me just try to process what you're saying. Because you're saying that Rashi at the end of the sugya notes our entire Gemara is not like Hananya. Meaning that we only permit tefillah when the food is fully cooked. Okay, it's the same. And therefore, chatma, according to the other Amoraim, chatma works with a different mechanism than Rashi said in the Mishnah. Is that a better way of saying it? Agreed. Okay, in other words, what I was trying to say is that Rashi needs this idea of Gilui Da'as for food that is already fully cooked, but not Mitzamek V'yaf, but still Mitzamek V'yafalo. What you're saying is, yeah, we're using Mitzamek V'yafalo because our whole sugya is working within that position which Rashi rejects. But according to that position that Rashi rejects, Katma is working with a different mechanism than the position that Rashi endorses. Right? So the position that Rashi rejects, and by the way, it works out nicely to some extent because the Rambam feels you can only do shehiyah on food that is fully cooked already. And the Rambam uses Hesach Hada'as, right, which just makes a lot of sense. Right? So Rashi, in explaining this position that he doesn't hold like, I think you actually reinforced my point rather than proved it wrong. You just made me say it in a more clear sort of way. Fair? So that is Rashi. Now.
Abi?
Yes.
I'm not convinced that, because everybody was like that Rashi's lashon of mitzamek, mitzamek v'yafalo. You could also say very easily that simuk is a general term for cooking, otherwise you wouldn't need to say yafalo or ralo.
Okay, so here's the thing. As you're arguing that simuk means all sorts of cooking, because all types of cooking, it gets more shriveled. That's your argument.
Yes.
However, within this Gemara, the word simuk is used in a more technical way. We're talking within a Gemara that uses the word simuk, referring to food that's already fully cooked, and the only issue at hand is whether it shrivels or not. Mm-hmm. Right? So you're correct if I would be talking in the abstract. If I would just see the word simuk in a halachic text in the middle of nowhere, I'd say, oh, maybe that refers to all cooking. But coming on Daf Lamed Zayin, where the word simuk has a more specific meaning, so then I don't think you can say it refers to all sorts of cooking. Now, Jake. Whoa. In other words, what you're asking as follows, if I understand you, that maybe Rashi in the Mishnah, when Rashi in the Mishnah says that you're trying to cool it down, so cooling the coals down is the Gilui Das. But here's the thing. If the idea of Kutma is that I'm trying to cool it down, so now that it reignited, I'm a really bad Kutma man. I am a terrible firefighter. Right?
The answer of this problem is Rashi really holds to me. The Heter comes from the fact that I'm a Galadas, that will make a light. How am I a Galadas? Because I make the cold cooler.
So what you're saying is you're trying to be Mishalev. You're trying to combine these explanations into one. That the idea is not just cooling it down, it's that because you're cooling the coals down, consequently, you are demonstrating that you don't want the food to get warmer.
What's the people that ask? I don't throw a lemon up in the air. I don't do kinyatsuda. What do? I put ashes on the coals. What's the
people
doing? That has to be something about that.
So I won't agree with. In other words, I don't see anywhere in the Rambam that the coals get cooler. Getting cooler is a concept that makes sense in Rashi world, that the issue at hand is hatmano, mosif hevel, not mosif hevel. That's why getting cooler matters. In the Rambam world, he doesn't say anything about getting cooler. I cannot accept that, Jake. You're a nice guy and all that, but I don't agree with you.
That's not what matters. What matters is the Gilui Das. How is that accomplished? Why does throwing coals, why does throwing ash on the coals show my Gilui Das that I don't want to?
Because it says, I think what it means is that I am shutting the door. I'm done. If I go camping, I like going camping during the summer. When I go camping and I say, I'm done with the campfire tonight. What do? I take ashes and I dump it on the fire and I go into my cabin and I go to sleep. That's what it shows. Right? I'm done. That's what putting ashes on the fire means. It's shutting the door. It's not necessarily about cooling it down or not cooling it down. That might be an incidental point. The main point is that I'm out of here. That is what Mesiach Das means. I'm out of here. Okay, when I go camping, I'm not worried about burning down my campsite because I have a fire pit. My fire pit is 4 feet deep. There is no way that it's going to burn down the campground. It ain't happening. It's going to burn out overnight anyway. How come I put ashes on top of my fire before I go to bed? I do it all the time. Again, the fire pits are pretty deep. Has anyone here gone camping? Does anyone know what I'm talking about with the fire pits? Okay. Jake, you're outvoted, right? Right on Zoom. So, I don't know. It seems to me that the Rambam's Hesach HaDa'as is not because of cooling down. It could be that you're right, that Rashi's cooling down is a way of showing Hesach HaDa'as. That's possible. But I think the Rambam is not saying anything about cooling down. That part I won't agree with. Now,
I mean, Jake is making a good point. It was sort of like what Rav Maisha was talking about in the Tshuva yesterday, that you can't just, like you said, you can't do a Kenyan Suda. You can't, snap your scissors and that's going to be your Gilui Das. So like for Rambam, what is the relevant,
I think the Gilui Da'as is that I'm out of here. It's like I'm shutting the door. I'm walking away from the fire. That's how I understand it.
Right. But
I don't care if the food gets hotter or not. Right? I'm pouring my ashes on the coals. I don't care anymore. And therefore, I'm not worried that you're going to stoke those coals.
If you just sprinkle some ashes and it doesn't accomplish anything, that's not shutting the door. That's, nudging the door.
No, sprinkling ashes is like way of demonstrating that I'm out of here. Right, correct.
A lot of ashes.
If I really dump it, then I'm definitely out of here. Sprinkling the ashes, Yerushalmi says, also works because it's like a show that I'm out of here. It's a demonstration rather than the reality. Okay, now, gentlemen. Tosfos on Lamed Zayin Amud Beis. It's not an easy Tosfos to read. But when the dust settles, Tosfos has two opinions as to whether this case of Katma v'Huv Ara, that we paskin, that when the I put the ashes on the fire and then it reignites, so would that permit all sorts of foods or not? The first opinion of Tosis is that since the halacha is that katma v'huv ara is considered katma, so every food on the planet is permitted. The second opinion on Tosfos says that katma v'huv ara only permits food which is already fully cooked, and the issue at hand is mitztameik. But katma v'huv ara would not permit all foods. And it's very tempting to say, ladies and gentlemen, it's very tempting to say that this Rashi is in agreement with the second opinion of Tosfos. Because Rashi says, Giloy da'as delo nichale b'tzimuke, right? It would seem like Rashi is saying the second opinion of Tosfos, that the issue at hand is mitztamek, and that's the only issue at hand, and you're right, katma v'huv ara, or whatever, would not help for all foods. Right? Is that correct? That it's tempting to read Rashi like the second opinion of Tosfos? However, this is absolutely impossible. Absolutely impossible. And let me explain why this can't be pshat. This cannot be pshat. I realize I have to turn off my ringer before I give shiur. Like, when I'm Masadar Kedushin, I remind everybody, like, please turn off the ringer. You don't want the cell phone, you know, to go off in the middle of the chuppah. I have to do it myself. Not that when I've been Masadar Kedushin, I had my cell phone on and I ever got a phone call in the middle. Usually it's someone else who gets a phone call, not the rabbi, although it's possible. It's possible the chosn of the kala could also get a call during the chuppah, although that would be really interesting. Where would the kala hide her cell phone? It doesn't like go well in white gowns, no? Okay, but these are just things to think about. But it would be, if you're bored, it would be tempting to say.
There are videos on YouTube.
There are videos on YouTube, okay. There are videos on YouTube about everything. So like, but it would be tempting to say that Rashi, who speaks about Nichole B'tzimuke, Rashi is agreeing with the second approach of Tosfos. However, the second approach of Tosfos is distinguishing between the case on Amud Aleph, Katma v'Nislapsa, and the case on Amud Beis of Katma v'Huv Ara. We mentioned this yesterday as a defense of Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, who says that Katma v'Huv Ara only helps for Shehiyah, not for Hachazara. And the second opinion in Tosfos says there's a difference between Nislapsa, which means there's a little fire, and Huvara means like an entire conflagration. It's a gigantic fire. That's what Tosfos said. But if that's the case, so you cannot say that Rashi is agreeing with the second shot in Tosfos. Gentlemen, look on Lamed Zayin Amud Aleph. Look at Rashi v'Nislapsa. It is 5 lines from the bottom. Isn't this a good pickup? What does Rashi say? Rashi says the word v'Nislapsa means Huv Ara. Correct? So Rashi is not distinguishing, like Tosfos is, between big fire and little fire. What begins with fire, right? Rashi is not making such a distinction at all. What that probably means, if we're not making any distinction at all.
Hello?
If I'm not making any distinction at all.
Would you talk louder? What? Yes?
Okay. If I'm not making any distinction at all, so therefore, Rashi cannot be aligned with the second explanation of Tosfos. And Rashi would be forced to say that Katma Huv Ara, which is the same as Nislapsa, only works on food which is already fully cooked. You cannot say that Khatma ever helps on all foods. Right? Khatma and it reignites cannot help on all foods, because in order to say that, you have to make the distinction between Nislabsa and Huvara, which is a distinction that Rashi does not make. That's my next insight into Rashi. Now, gentlemen, two more points la halacha. Now that we know that a blech works based on the fact that we consider our modern day blechs like garuf akatum, or probably katum. It's not garuf. You're not getting rid of the coals, but a blech is the equivalent of covering the coal. And we know katma v'huv arav in Islam so works. By the way, I should point in the side, find katma v'huv arav in the Rambam. Nowhere. Find katma v'huv arav in Shulchan Aruch. Nowhere. It's unusual that a halacha that is clear in the Gemara is not cited in the Rambam and in the Shulchan Aruch. The Magen Avraham in Se'if Katan Gimel quotes this idea of Katma V'huv Arav in Islapsa, whatever it is. The Mishneh Brura in Se'if Katan Yudalid quotes the Magen Avraham, but it's unusual that a halacha that is clear in the Gemara without any disagreement is omitted from the Rambam and from the Shulchan Aruch. It is, it's unusual. By the way, if you look in the Ein Mishpat says Rambam Parak Gimel Halacha Dalet, but it's in parentheses, and what that means is it doesn't really appear in the Rambam Parak Gimel Halacha Dalet. The author of the Ein Mishpat, who was it, Rabbi Yeshaya Peck or somebody? Rabbi Yeshaya Berlin? So the author, I think, noted that it ain't really there, and that's why it's in parentheses. Why is it not quoted la halacha? So says the Pnei Yehoshua, a fairly simple point, because we don't hold of it. The Pnei Yehoshua says, because the idea is that katma means you're cooling the coals down, or katma means that there is some sort of heker, and once the fire lights again, these things don't exist anymore. So therefore, katma v'huv arah, katma v'nis labsa, throw it away. We don't paskin that way la halacha, says the rabbi of Frankfurt am Main, the Pnei Yehoshua. Okay.
Then why isn't it in the Rambam?
Why? It's not in the Rambam.
But those two reasons that you just listed were Rashi and the Ramah.
Uh-uh. You're saying according to Rambam, attribute. So the Pnei Yehoshua doesn't really go through the three reasons. You're right. According to my logic, the Rambam should have mentioned it. The Pnei Yehoshua notes just that the entire Gemara doesn't make sense, because logically speaking, we would say once the fire reignites, so whatever you did beforehand doesn't matter. Right? Whatever I did beforehand is gone. And you can't say you're Mesiach Da'as, maybe, because if you'd really be Mesiach Da'as, you'd leave it, close the door, not look back. If you didn't do a good job, you have to go back. If you feel there's a need to cover the fire, again, I'm not sure. You're raising a good point. I don't know.
Okay.
Now, comes along Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach. In the Shmira Shabbos 2.0, this is found in footnote 46. I actually, this morning in the Beis Medrash, they didn't have Shmira Shabbos 2.0. Maybe one of you stole it, but I couldn't find it. So I had to look in Shmira Shabbos 3.0 and try to find it. So in 3.0, it's found in footnote 63 and in footnote 217. If Shlomo Zalman Auerbach notes, let's say I put a blech on top of my range, and then I adjust the flame after the blech is there. Says Rav Shlomo Zalman, you just undermined your blech. Because the idea of a blech is that you are giving up on the fire. If I put the blech down and then I start adjusting it, that shows I did not give up. That's an interesting point. Again, I don't think it would be correct for Rashi, because ultimately the blech is still cooling things down somewhat. Again, the Chazon Ish says that it's not cooling it down enough. I think it's clear that whenever you put a blech on top of a range, the fire gets more spread out, so it's cooler than it would be otherwise. That the idea of heker, the idea that a blech is supposed to remind me not to stoke the flames, is obviously not true if I put the blech down and then I adjust it. Says Reb Shlomo Zalman, make sure the fire is adjusted before you put the blech down. That's what he says. Then he adds in the footnote 217, which is 184 in the version 2, Reb Shlomo Zalman adds that maybe this is meduyak in the Gemara. The expression the Gemara is katma v'nitlabta. Katma v'huv ara. Right? That is like a, it happened. It's a hit pa'el. It doesn't say katam v'hiv'ir. Doesn't say that I reignite it. It says katma v'huv ara. It happened. Says Reb Shlomo Zalman, if you ignite it yourself, you undermine your katma. This same diuk, by the way, appears in, I taught in Stern 2 years ago. So we taught on the Chanukah sugyas. You remember this, Jake. You're hanging around Stern then, right? So now, it's on record. So now, when we did the Chanukah sugyas, so one of the famous gemaras at the beginning of Chanukah is, if I light the Chanukah candles, and then the wind comes and extinguishes them, do I have to relight the Chanukah candles, right? Remember this? Kavsa zakukla or kavsa eno zakukla. It's a very famous sugya right at the beginning of the Chanukah discussion. Comes along Reb Yaakov Emden. He was famous, just Google him. Reb Yaakov Emden. Comes along Reb Yaakov Emden, and he says, if you read the Gemara says, kavsa, if the flame extinguished on its own, then, as a matter of halacha, we assume you don't have to relight the Chanukah candles. But let's say you light the Chanukah candles, and then you blow them out yourself, so then, of course, you have to relight it. You can't possibly say that you fulfill the mitzvah of Chanukah candles, I light it, then I blow out. It makes no sense, right? He also has the same deal, the difference between Kufsa, it was extinguished, and Kiba, and you extinguish it. Right? That's the same diak that Reb Shlomo Zalman is making over here. Katma, v'huv ara, as opposed to v'hiv'ir. Yes.
But wait on this, because I thought everyone would introduce something with Mei Yoshua. Does anybody do anything with Mei Yoshua? It sounds nuts on no grounds. It's a rejection of Peter Shmara that isn't argued on, that everybody uses Raya's what the Tzachalot is. It's quoted in the Rif.
It's quoted in the Rif, yeah. It's quoted in the Rush, but that makes it more striking. It makes it, the fact that Shulchan Aruch doesn't quote it, again, this is a large meta-halachic question. Is the Gemara pardon the halachic text, or is the Shulchan Aruch the halachic text? If something is omitted from Shulchan Aruch, how significant is that?
Here it's different. On the Mechadon event, we had the questions about Gavi Amita. And we said that the Rambam doesn't mention them because he says if you put it on Gavi Karka Mamish.
Agreed.
So over here, Kipno, once you do Ketima, then you're done. If he doesn't, you would have to write Hulk Kipno Mahobro.
Whoa. I don't agree with that point because I think logically, I would say that if it gets reignited, so my action is bottle. Whatever I did is gone. I think logically speaking, the conclusion of our Gemara is a big chiddush. I would have thought intuitively that when I put the ashes on the coals and then it reignites, I'd say intuitively, didn't do anything. That's what I would have thought. Now, next issue.
Rebbe?
Yeah.
Doesn't Tosfos say not like that, the long, complicated Tosfos? He says that the Svar Chitzona is that...
Yeah, he does. I don't understand that. Tosis is assuming that logically speaking, it should be that when it reignites, it doesn't do anything. Again, if you would just ask me, I don't think that makes sense. I'm just going by my own intuition over here. You're right. Tosis does not say that. I agree. What did you say?
Compared to the Gemara and the Rishonim, we have that Tosis, how in the world It's not halacha. We take this Pnei Yeshua into account, or we assume that the Gemara...
No one takes the Pnei Yeshua into account. I'm only mentioning the Pnei Yeshua because it's interesting. Did we speak about this? The Kutzker used to say that when you finish Shema, you say MS. Then you go on, V'yatze, V'nochon, V'kayim, V'yashar, and the last thing is Yafe. Yafe is very far from MS. It could look nice, it's beautiful, not necessarily true. Fair enough? Good. What happens if I have a blech that is on the stove and part of the blech falls off? Again, how does it happen? You have some pots on the stove, you're adjusting the pots a little bit. We'll have to talk about adjusting the pots in a minute if we have time. And the blech falls down in the process of adjusting the pots. Does that count as a blech? So you would say, well, the Gemara Paskins, Katma Bechuvara, works. So therefore, the fact that the blech fell off, it doesn't matter. Right now, the pot remains perfectly permitted to use. You could even do hachazara there, we paskin.
Why can't you put it right back?
So can you put the blech right back? So we assume you can, unless you're a chazonish Jew who's worried that putting metal onto fire is going to be some sort of cooking. Absolutely. As a matter of halacha, you can put it back. It could be it's also tedious. Let's say there's only one person around. So you won't be able to lift up the pot and hold it in the air and get the blech. It requires like some sort of difficulty. Ari?
Yeah, can I just ask, when you say blech, I have two images in my head. One is a tin on a stove with fire, real fire under it. And the other is like an electric blech. The whole issue of Katma Vahuvara seems to come up more if you've got a real fire than if you just have a heat source.
So I'm
are you using them interchangeably, or are you talking about a blech only?
This conversation is about the old-fashioned blech of your youth. The blech that's on top of the range top, and right?
With real fire.
Regular heat source, I'm going to call a plata. That is like the term that we'll use for just to distinguish between them. So Katma V'Huv'ara, the Gemara says, works. So we would think that it should work if the blech falls off, and for whatever the reason, I can't put it back on. However, Rav Moshe Feinstein, that Shuvah and Chelak Dalad, Semen Ayin Dalad, Os Lamed, Rav Moshe Feinstein says that it doesn't work. Because Rav Moshe argues that Katma V'Huv'ara only works when you still have some ashes that remain. If all the ashes are gone, Rav Moshe says, logically speaking, it doesn't make sense that it should help. This idea that Rav Moshe is suggesting is actually an answer to the question that we raised on the Ramach. The Ramach says that Kotma works based on the fact that there's a heker. There's a reminder not to stoke the coals. So he asks, how's it going to help when it reignites? The answer of Moshe Feinstein says is, well, it reignites, but there's still a few ashes left on the side. It's enough to be a reminder. If that's the case, of Moshe says, there's a difference between if the blech falls completely off, it's gone, it's over. But when the blech falls off somewhat, so then it is permitted. Right? If the blech falls partially off, then it's permitted to return the food. But if the blech completely falls off, Rav Moshe says it's forbidden. Well, according to our logic,
of a blech, like where is the blech when it's partially off?
So I think the idea is that like I'm moving my pot around and the blech slides over, so it's partially. It's covering, let's say it was covering one burner completely. And when I move a pot, now it's on the side covering a tiny bit of the fire on the side. It's not covering the entire
efficacy fire. Of your blech as well.
What?
You've also lost the efficacy of your blech.
In what do you mean?
Your halachic issues, your blech will not be so hot anymore.
My blech
If it's only covering a little bit of the fire.
If it's only covering part of the fire, so the part that remains on the fire will be much less hot than I want it.
The whole blech will be like much less hot.
Agreed. But it still has some heat. Yeah. It's still doing something.
Okay.
Now, question. I have a blech, traditional blech on top of my gas range. Usually when people have a blech, what they do is the traditional gas range in the landlord's special apartments has four burners underneath it, correct? Landlord's special? Now, usually you put a blech on and you have fire under one of the burners. And the idea is that the heat spreads and you're going to put a few pots on the blech. So some of the pots are directly on top of the fire. Other of the pots are near the fire. Some of the pots are pretty far from the fire. Am I allowed to move the pots around, right? The way I created the scenario before is that I'm moving the pot around and then the blech falls off. Are you allowed to move the pots around on the blech? Obviously, I'm not allowed to take food straight out of the refrigerator and put it on top of the fire directly, no? That's, even if the fire is blecht, I can't take a kugel from the refrigerator and put it directly on. That you're not allowed to do. That's like putting the food directly on the fire, right? That would be hachazara without odem miyodo datala hachazir, etc. You don't have all the conditions, so that you're not allowed to do. But if the food was on that piece of metal, but it was far away from the heat source, can I move it? So there are different areas that we can talk about. I would say that this breaks down to four regions, right? This almost sounds like the Israeli-Palestinian discussion, area A, B, C, and D. Okay? So now, area A is that zone directly on top of the fire. Area B is pretty close to that. It's an area that the food, it might not be directly on the fire, but it's close enough that that food could be heated to become Yad Zoledes. The food could be heated to become the temperature of halachic cooking on Shabbos. Area C could be the area of the blech where the metal itself is Yad Zoledes. So if you would touch the metal, you would recoil your hand in a second, but the food can't get that hot in area C. Area D is the far corner of the blech where the blech is cold as a cucumber. Right? That is the four areas on the blech. Are you allowed to move areas? Are you allowed to move food from B to A, from C to A, from D to A? Those are the questions we have to address. Part of this conversation involves the Gemara that we learned on Lamed Zayin Amud Aleph. We learned a halacha called smicha, right? Smicha means the food that is next to the oven. Now, we paskin, as a matter of halacha, that smicha is, right? The halacha is, the Gemara has a question, mahu lismoch. So we paskin that smicha is permitted, correct? If that's the case, I am allowed to, according to the Rif and the Rambam, I could leave food on this area that is near the fire, but not directly on the fire. According to Tosfos, I can even return food to the area that is near the fire, not directly on the fire. One could make a strong case, and it would seem like this, that area, I'm not sure. I could say that area B is halachically the same as area A. That maybe it's considered on the fire because it could actually cook. It doesn't have to be that you have the fire right underneath it. One could make a case that area B is exactly the same as area A, although not compelling. I don't have any compelling proof one way or the other. Area C, that area where the metal, the blech, is hot, but it cannot cook anything else, I would have thought logically that that is the same as smicha. And if that's the case, so now I have a question. Am I allowed to move food from smicha to algaba? Right? The Gemara in Lama Zayin Amun Aleph says, mahu lismoch? We say as a matter of halacha, smicha is permitted. So I could leave food in that area near the fire on Shabbos, near the stove on Shabbos. What about when the food is there? Can I move the food from smicha to algaba? By the way, it's possible also that area B is considered smicha. I'm not sure. It's also possible, and this is actually true according to Tosfos, that that area B and area C is worse than smicha. Because Tosfos comments that I only permit smicha when you have the wall of the oven between my pot and the heat source, no? At the bottom, Tosfos Lamed Zayin Amud Aleph. Masik, the Gemara concludes, Shari lismoch, mikol makom, ein lumon, mikam lismoch, etzel ha'esh, d'shani hacha, d'dofne hakir mafsiken. Right, Tosfos says that maybe there's no heter to put the food next to a uncovered fire, because the case is that there are walls, the Dofne Hakira is mafsek. Now, Tosis' scenario, the walls are vertical. In our case, the wall, meaning the blech, is horizontal.
Aishna.
Well, I don't know, but I do know that Tosfos is only saying that there's a difference between a completely open fire, a completely exposed fire, and a fire that's inside an oven.
But that logic doesn't work at all. It's not garfakotim because there's no that's not called a hefsik. All the hefsiks are only vertical.
I'm not sure. I really don't know. By the way, the case in the Gemara also is that mahu lismoch means, can I put the food near an oven which is not gar fakatum? Our case is that the oven is gar fakatum. That's precisely our case. Now, what is the halacha about moving food around from area B to A? So almost all the poskim say B to A is perfectly permitted. C to A, Reb Oyashiv is Makel, that's worth $1 million, gentlemen. This is a kula from Rebbe Yashev, that you can move the food from C to A. Rev Moshe Feinstein in Chelak Aleph Siman Sadi Dalet, sounds like he's Machmir. And in the Archos Shabbos Halacha Samach Tes, it sounds like he's Machmir. Again, so to move from B to A, from an area that the food is in a place where it could get cooked, it could become Yad Soledes, so that the poskim say is permitted. What about moving food from C to A? So some poskim say it's permitted, some poskim say it's forbidden. What about food from D to A? So that for sure is forbidden, no? D is absolutely cold. What about, though, taking food out of the refrigerator and putting it on area C? That area where the blech is, the metal itself is Yad Soledes, the metal is 113 degrees Fahrenheit, but the food cannot reach that temperature. Is that permitted? Is it permitted to put food in an area where the food cannot get heated, but the area is Yad Soledes? Let me just finish this thought, maybe. The Alter Rebbe writes that it is forbidden to put food on an area when the area is Yad Soledes. However, the Mishnah Brura in Se'if Katan Samaches and Samachtes, the Mishnah Brura says you're allowed to put food on an area that's Yad Soledes, so long as the food does not become Yad Soledes. Right. Now, obviously, as a matter of practical halacha, it's hard to exactly figure out, is this an area where the food can become Yad Saledes or not? How long am I leaving the food there for? Let's say I leave the food there for 10 hours, it would actually, it's very hard to figure it out. So as a matter of practical halacha, it's a very bad idea to put food in a location where the blech is Yad Saledes, but the food can't be Yad Saledes, just because as a matter of practicality, it's very hard to know exactly where that zone is. But if you hold that you're allowed to put food from the refrigerator onto Area C, so it's inconceivable that you would also hold that you could then put the food from Area C onto A. Because if that would be the case, you just undermined the entire halacha of covering fires on Shabbos, no? What I could do is take the food out of the refrigerator, put it on C, right? Spend a minute, do a jig, and then move it over to A. That makes no sense, right? That the halacha would not allow us this type of loophole that completely gets rid of the purpose of the halacha. So that's all I have to say. I don't have any real conclusions. If you want to read Rabbi Willig's essay on this in his Sefer Am Mordechai Siman Vav, please do so. If you read it and you explain it to me, you'll make me really happy. I don't understand the way he writes. I have great difficulty understanding the way Rabbi Willig writes. So I took out Rabbi Willig's English Sefer on Bishul B'Shabbos. I figured, okay, if I didn't get the Hebrew, maybe the English will be easier. I understood the English less. They say that Rav Soloveitchik used to say Shirin Yeshiva in Yiddish. And actually, apparently it was Danny Greer, whatever, who convinced the Rav to start saying Shir in English because he didn't understand Yiddish. And the students understood the Rav's Shir less when he was speaking in English and he spoke in Yiddish, in part because the Rav knew English based on what he was, based on reading texts. And if you don't know it as a spoken language, you know it as a language based on what you read, so you pronounce words like a fargener. No? Okay, Nady, you had a comment.
Yeah, I was going to ask a cartographical question of how large Area B is.
So again, I think Area B is any area where the food could be cooked to Yad Saledes. Again, how large it is, I don't know your stove. I don't know how high it's set. I don't know anything. The Gemara one place asks, what's the shear of Yichud? And the Gemara says, well, the amount of time to walk around a tree. Well, is it a big tree, a small tree? How fat's the tree, right? Sota daftalin. No, for some reason, Chazal sometimes try to give us measurements, but the measurement is meaningless. A foot. A foot is a meaningless measurement the way it was originally conceived, because it used to mean the size of the king's foot. Right? And it would constantly switch. I have a lot to say about these topics. An amma in some achronim is given as 18 varsishkas, which was like a Russian measurement unit. In other sources, it's given as 16 varsishkas. It's probably not a halachic disagreement. It's just that the varsishka changed over time. Sometimes you try to standardize units, but you standardize things in a way that doesn't help, right? Kellogg's Raisin Bran has 2 scoops of raisins. I don't know how large a scoop is, so it makes no sense, right? Maybe their 2 scoops are smaller than someone else's 1 scoop, right? This is Talmudic logic, gentlemen. Okay, any other comments? Okay, guys, have a good Shabbos, and we'll continue, God willing, on Sunday. I will send out a note about what time we have share on Sunday, just because there's some confusion, and we'll try to figure it out and try to make as many people happy as we can. Okay, have a good day.
Thank you. Good Shabbos.
Shabbos. Yeah.